everybody. Dean Castanova from Journey, and you are listening to Shane Christopher Neal. Crank it, people. Oh, doing well. I'm here in Calgary. I'm freezing.
Well, it's funny. I was just going to say, I'm in Canada too, right? I'm in Ontario, but I see you're playing in, what is it, Calgary tomorrow, I think, and then Edmonton or a couple of shows in Alberta.
Yeah, dude, I've never been in cold like this, dude. I mean, I've been here before, and I think the coldest we got was Saskatoon, and that was like, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. It was a while ago. I think it's been a long time, but
and you're going back. You're going back to Saskatoon. You're going back to Saskatoon in a couple of days.
I know, dude. And it's like 24 below. I'm like, okay, my three jackets and my long sleeve shirt is not working. It's not working, man.
Welcome.
I'm a smoker, dude.
Welcome to Canada.
Oh, dude, I love Canada. I can't, you know, the home of Rush. I mean, come on. I mean, the greatest country in the world, in my opinion, just because of Rush.
Absolutely. And because of Neil Peart, of course, one of the best drummers of all time.
Dude, yeah, he was a huge influence. Are you kidding? I remember, when he passed, I was doing a recording with some guys from Rascal Flatts and Chasing Chef. We were, you know, doing some recording. And they knew about it, and they wouldn't tell me because they knew it would floor me. And after we got done recording, it's like 4 in the afternoon. I said, "You know, I don't know if you know this, but Neil passed away." And I sat down in a chair for like an hour, and I didn't say a word. I just sat because he was such a huge influence on me as a player. I was wrecked because it just caught everybody off guard. Nobody knew, which was kudos to, you know, Getty and Alex and the organization for keeping it quiet. But my Lord, man, that wrecked me. It wrecked me for a good hour. I just sat. Didn't say a word.
Well, it's funny. The group that you just mentioned, I watched some of those videos on YouTube, by the way, and you guys played some great stuff. Now, you would play like a Rascal Flatts song. You'd play a Journey song. Like you kind of played a bunch of different songs. And it's really cool. You guys did a great job.
Dude, thank you, man. I got to say, man, you know, I knew Jason as the singer for Chicago. I did not know how amazing he is on the bass.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I knew he'd play. But we got in the room and we were just goofing off and he started throwing down and it was like, what? I was like, wait a minute. No, dude, I put him in my top three bass players of all time that I've played with, man. I'm telling you, he and Geezer Butler, Marco Mendoza, those are my top three guys, man. You know, just unbelievable skill. I did not know that. So not only is he a monster vocalist, he shreds on the page, man. One of my favorites. I loved working with him. Such a consummate, you know, professional. Amazing. Just all around musician. Just amazing. Great producer. Helped produce my vocals on that record because I didn't know what to do. But he helped me a ton. He really did.
Well, speaking of your vocals, not that long ago, I did an interview with Kelly Keggy, the drummer, of course, of Night Ranger. And I asked Kelly, I said, can you name me the top singing drummer on the planet today? He said Dean Castronovo. So I don't know, you owe him a shot or a beer or something.
I would have to pay him my friendship dues for that one. My God. Oh, dude, no, Kelly's another inspiration. You know, he's an amazing singer, but he's a very underrated drummer. I mean, I don't think people really understand the skill that he has as a player. He's a very integral part of the Night Ranger sound. I filled in for Kelly when he had his heart issues, and it definitely wasn't the same, and it didn't have that swagger that Kelly holds with that. You know, he's got a thing, man, and people, you know, I think drummers get it, but most of the regular people out there that aren't musicians or even musicians, they may not know how vital his drumming is to that sound. I mean, he's got a pocket that
could agree
massive.
More. Yeah,
and his
absolutely.
Lip, yeah, monster player.
So,
that's humbling.
We'll get into this, obviously, Revolution Saints Journey, but a couple of things I want to tell you. First of all, you and I had a conversation with John Karabi when you were in Canada. We did a radio interview. That's the first time I spoke with you. And then I went to the Phoenix where the Dead Daisies were playing. You and I hung out backstage. I took photos. It's on Facebook, so it's got to be real. And I had mentioned to you,
it was real, dude.
I had mentioned to you the band Hardline, because I'm a huge Hardline fan, and that first album, Hot Cherie, Rhythm from a Red Car, Taking Me Down, one of my favorites. But what I want to ask you is about the band Bad English. I did an interview, a couple of interviews with John Waite, and I love John, but take me back to what it was like at the time in the early 90s playing in that band. You guys had some great songs. We play, I'm a drummer as well, we play a couple of Bad English songs, but just give me a little bit of the background there that you can recall anyway, because what a great couple of albums they put out.
Oh, dude, I'll tell you, for me, okay, it was my first major gig. And how I got that gig was I was working with Tony McAlpine in San Francisco, you know, in a rehearsal place. And I walked in for rehearsals with my drum tech, and there was Neil playing with Mark Robertson, the keyboard player, and Tony. They were just goofing around. And so I got behind the kit, and I'm freaking out. I'm trying to keep it together, but I'm a huge Journey fan. So I am freaking out just to be in the same room with Neil Sean, let alone playing with the guy. So we just start playing, just jamming, going through all these riffs. And he started playing these riffs. He goes, you know, and I started playing to him. And then we stopped after about 15 minutes. He goes, "Do you know the Journey stuff?" I said, "Oh, dude, this is God to me. Are you kidding? I know all the Journey stuff." So we started playing Journey songs just for fun. And so he leaves, shakes my hand, he leaves. And I'm sitting in there, and I go out to the payphone. There were payphones back then. So I called my wife and said, "Oh my God, I just played with Neil Sean." I'm freaking out, right? I go back into the rehearsal place, and Neil walks back in. He goes, "Hey, come here." And I thought he was talking to my tag. And that's how stupid I was. I look back at my tag, and he thought you were me. And it was me. Okay, so I go out. There's his Ferrari Testarossa. He gets me in the car, puts in a cassette, and he starts playing. So I says, "What do you think of this stuff?" I'm like, "Are you kidding? It's unbelievable." He goes, "Well, I'm going to do a solo record. I want you to play on it." I'm like, "God, you got to be kidding." So, right, a week goes by, and Neil calls me back and goes, "Man, I bagged the solo record for now. I'm going to go down and play with John Waite, you know, John Cain, Ricky Phillips. And I said I wouldn't come down unless I brought you with me. Do you want to come down?" So I auditioned for Bad English out of 36 guys. I was the guy.
Wow.
They got me. And, oh, dude. So, yeah, Bad English was my first big gig. So, dude, I was like a little kid in a candy store, deer in the headlights mix. Just like, oh, my God. This is huge. I didn't really realize until on October 31st, on Halloween, 1989, we got our first number one song. "When I See You Smile" was number one in November.
Yeah.
And I called my parents on a payphone again, crying. Just, "Oh my God, you guys, I made it. I made it. It worked. It happened. This worked." So it was the greatest time of my life. And I got really close with John. I love John. One of my favorite singers of all time. I mean, just amazing. All the time, a great storyteller. And the phrasing he has is second to none. He's, to me, he and Paul Rodgers were my favorite singers to work with. Just unbelievable singers.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, it was huge for me, Shane. I freaked out. And I still freak out to this day. I still, man, John is, you know, I haven't talked to John in years and years, but I love him. I respect him. And he taught me how to play for a song, dude. He and Neil, you know, they taught me how to, and John Cain taught me how to play for a song.
Well, "When I See You Smile" is the song that we play. And the thing is, back then, as you can appreciate, the drum sound that you guys got and that everybody got in the 80s and 90s is completely different than what you kind of get today when you're playing, especially if you're a small town bar band. But I love Bad English. But let's move on to Revolution Saints, Against the Winds. I want to ask you a couple of things. So first of all, you got a kind of a new band. You got Jeff Pilson, Joel Hoekstra, great players, obviously, in this band. But my question is, what keeps you motivated to do this? I mean, you're singing in the band, you're drumming in the band, but you do know you play drums at Journey, right? So what keeps you motivated to keep this project kind of moving along?
You know what, dude? I'm not a lead singer. I don't lead sing at Journey. I sing one song at Journey, lead. So and I love singing, but, you know, I am a drummer. That's my first and foremost thing. So Rivers and Change is just going to be a one-off, like a solo record, just something like the Dean Castellanova solo record. And then Serafino, president of Frontiers, brought in Jack and Doug and said, "Hey, you know, why don't we make it a band?" And they were going to call it, the label called it Pleasure Dome. And Jack was like, "Yeah, no, we're not going to call it Pleasure Dome." So we ended up calling it, you know, it was Jack's name, Revolution Saints. So we took on the moniker, did a bunch of records. It was great. And then when Jack and Doug decided to leave, I was like, "Well, you know, this is going to be tough. Who do we fill these shoes? These are massive shoes." And Jeff Pilson and Joel Hoekstra's names came up. And I was like, "Oh, my God, I know both those guys from Tours with Journey. We get along great." And that's 90% of it, dude. It's the chemistry.
Absolutely.
The chemistry works. And I had such a great chemistry with Doug and Jack. So I was like, okay, this will work. Because I love those guys. not only his players, the monster players, the pedigree, the resume speaks for itself, but the people that they are was a huge, huge, you know, drawing point for me. I was like, yeah, that's perfect. And you know, the record speaks for itself. I mean, the songs are great. They're definitely more, in my opinion, more of a European, like a, almost a Deep Purple, Whitesnake heavier vibe. It's not, everybody says heavier, but it is. It's a little edgier. You know, the other stuff was a little bit more poppy,
right,
to work with my voice. But I'm starting to come into my own. I'm not a lead singer, so I'm trying to come into what is Dean Castronova's voice, not Dean's version of Steve Perry or Dean's version of Ronnie Dio or Dean, you know what I mean?
Right. So, but you can't tell me that you're not that great. Listen, you listen, and I'm sure you watch this over and over, but Mother Father Vegas 2008 on the DVD or whatever, however you watch it on, you'll watch it today on YouTube. Man, I played it for my daughter, who's like in her early 20s. I go, listen to this guy sing. Forget about the drumming, which is amazing. But man, you, even in 2008, back at that time, we're killing it. My question about the Revolution Saints songs, Obviously Alessandro DeVecchio is behind producing it. Is he writing the songs, the lyrics, and then kind of sending it to you? Like, what's the process for you guys? Because I speak to a lot of bands, one of them being Harry Hess here in Ontario, who is doing some work for Frontiers, and Alessandro, and then they send him some stuff, and he puts it together, records it at home, sends it on. So what's the process for you guys when you're recording this stuff, and who's writing the material?
Well, you know, with Jack and Doug, and that was kind of the stickler with Jack and Doug, is that we weren't being able to do, you know, a lot of the songs were sent to us, right? And then Doug and Jack would put their spins on them, make them sound great, maybe, you know, put their stamps on them. With this, the new records, the last two that we did with Joel and Jeff, Joel has had a major part in writing. So Joel's got his fingers in the pie there, and you can tell. I mean, there's definitely Joel's signature on it.
Right.
Jeff and I, Alessandro programs the drums, and then I fix them because Alessandro's a good drummer. But you know what I mean. It's like you do what you're good at, man. Right.
Absolutely.
Like playing guitar, keyboard. You know what I mean. So, but he's great. So you know, I put my spin on him as well. But lyrically, Alessandro just knows me. We, you know, when all my stuff happened back in 2015, and I had to leave Journey, there was a lot of pent up feelings in there, and me and Alessandro would have talks for hours just about what it was like, what I was going through, how I was feeling. And dude, he would pull these songs out and go, dude, I felt exactly like that. Wow. That's exactly what I felt like. And he's been able to carry that out with all these records. Like, you know, I know Dean real well. I you know, cause I'm not a lyricist, man. That's one thing I never was. And I will commend Neil Peart, God rest his beautiful soul, one of the greatest lyricists of all time, you know? So I've never written lyrics. I've written one or two songs and I'm terrible at it. I just, you know, my songs are dumb.
Know what you're good at.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to stay in my lane, Shane. So, you know what I mean? It's like, I let him do it. So, but this time we've got Joel and you know, Jeff and I just did our parts, but this next record we're going to come out with, I mean, the new one just came out, Against the Winds is out now, but we're going to do another one, hopefully in August, if we have time. I'm not sure if I'm going to have time or not, because I'm still on the Def Leppard tour. But we're going to write and record as a three-piece with Alessandro, as a four-piece. All of us four together writing this stuff. Because Jeff's a great songwriter, and he really hasn't had a chance to do much on these records yet either. And he's another one. He's so underrated, man. I mean, that guy, I mean, as a musical director for Foreigner and stuff, and of course, Dokken, and you know, all of the stuff he does, he's brilliant. But we haven't tapped that source yet. We've tapped a little bit of Joel. We haven't tapped Jeff. Now we're going to tap him, man. And that's, I think that's going to be a huge thing. Cause I don't know how, what's going to happen after this next record is done and released. I want to go play. We do. All three of us want to go play.
Yeah, that was my next question. That was my next question. Yeah. Would you think we'll ever see a Revolution Saints show somewhere?
Come hell or high water, dude, I'm gonna make it happen. I got at least one, dude. I did one with Jack and Doug, and I was scared to death as a front man. I mean, I'm that's not my element. I mean, put me behind the drums, I'll sing behind the drum kit all day long. But I do. I look like Ricky Bobby with the hands. I don't know with my hands. I usually got sticks in them, you know. So for me, I'm gonna give it a shot. And if I suck, at least I can say, you know what, I gave it a shot. And I'm terrible at it, and I'll never do it again. Or, you know what, I gave it a shot, and I pulled it off. Pulled it off. You know, we'll see what happens. You know, I'd love to go take lessons from Paul Stanley, who's the greatest frontman of all time, in my opinion. So, you know what I mean? It would be great to go, what do I do here? You know what I mean? I asked him, actually, we did the video for one of the songs off the last record, Eagle Flight. And I sent it to him. I go, dude, I know I'm not a frontman. Do you have any advice? I did. Just help. you know? And he goes, well, you're singing with such power. You need a vocal. You need a mic stand. You need something to hold on to, bro. You've got to get a hold of something. I got a guitar. But he's, he's a god.
Yeah.
So, sure. But he did. He goes, you need a vocal mic stand. You need a mic stand. Something to hold on to. You can grip hold up because you're a very powerful singer. So this last video, I did one with a vocal mic stand, and I was so awkward with it. I was still like, what am I? I'm going to fall over here. I don't know what to do with this. So I'll get there, man. I'll tell you, Paul Stanley should charge like $5,000 an hour to teach frontman how to really be a frontman. Because
right.
He is the king.
Absolutely.
He is the king.
You mentioned Journey, and obviously you're the drummer in Journey. You got a second chance doing this. I'm not going to go back to that story, yeah. but what's the mood in Journey right now? There were some issues, not with you, but with some of the other members that have been pretty public over the time. So what's it kind of like on tour right now? Are things good in the Journey camp?
Well, I got to be honest, dude, and this is BS. Everything got mended. The two wives snapped those two guys' heads. Snap out of it. Look what we got here. Don't screw this up. I remember one time I sent an email to the guys. I said, guys, don't screw up my ride. I just came home. Don't screw this up. You don't know what it's like to lose it.
Right.
You will hate it. It will be the worst thing in the world. I know what it's like to have something so beautiful. And one stupid choice, one stupid action, I lost it all. Don't screw this up. This is beautiful. And, I took the wives to wake them up. And now we got Paula, who's an amazing businesswoman. John's wife is an amazing businesswoman. Mikkel has got the gift of gab, man. She's a fantastic promoter and really good at talking to promoters and hyping the band. It's amazing, dude. It's a great combo. So we got Neil and John, Mikkel and Paula running the show now, and it's smooth as silk. It's like it was, honestly, when I joined back in 1998. It's all for one and one for all, and we're on a mission. And we're all laughing again. We're on the same plane again. It's fantastic, man. And it just took everybody to just go, you know what? You're right. It's too beautiful to throw away. We got to fix this. We got to, set the petty differences aside and let's go for it. And it's been honestly wonderful, honestly, in the sight of God, wonderful.
Absolutely. That's awesome to hear. I want to ask you about your drums. You play DW drums, and yes, I want to ask you about your drum sound, though. You use, I can't remember where I heard this. It was probably another interview. Are you using drum triggers? And if you are you using actual drum heads that are triggered? Are you using the mesh heads that are triggered? And was it you or somebody who said to me that you were taking, or they were taking samples of Steve Smith's drums? Is that accurate? Yeah. Or give me the idea, what's going on with that?
Okay, we're using the Roland triggers, and we have had sounds of Smith's drums that we had sampled that we used in 2014. And we put them up now. I mean, we just got the triggers up now. And honestly, bro, I'm just going to be honest. Neil and I and John, we hate them. It doesn't sound good. And yeah, honestly, since I got clean, I'm not playing like I used to. I used to play with both guns blazing just as hard as I could, choke the crap out of the drums, and they just be like, they sound like cardboard boxes because I beat the living hell out of them. I've lightened up my touch. I'm playing a lot more with a lot more finesse, and I'm just relaxing. And I'm pulling the sound out of the drum instead of choking it. So Neil and I and John were talking on the plane the other night. Said, you know what? We don't need these anymore. I'm not too loud. I'm not overpowering the stage. I'm just relaxing. I'm playing. I mean, I'm 60. I can't play like that anymore anyway. It starts to mess with my body. So, I'm playing more relaxed. It's like, let's just get rid of these triggers. We don't need them. These drums are the best drums made on the planet.
I agree.
Let them sing, man. And they are. You know what, dude? The last six shows we played, when I've lightened up and we've been just relaxing and going through it, Neil's like, man, I can hear every nuance that you're playing now. It's not this just like sneakers in a dryer. Because the triggers, I do a lot of fast stuff, and the triggers will not pick it up. I don't care how sensitive they are. The only time that you can pick up what I'm doing is on an actual D-drum kit. You can hear every little nuance, every note. But when you got triggers, man, they don't pick up. There's latency, and I hate them. I'm just going to be honest, I hate them.
I'm asking you for a reason because tonight we have a rehearsal tonight, and tonight's the first night that I'm using triggers because they're trying to keep the volume down in the rehearsal space.
Right.
And when I went to pick them up and I went through the whole process, what I was told was exactly what you said, is that I hate latency when you're playing drums because it seems I play to a click. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But at the end of the day, you feel like you're like sloppy because your latency to what you hear.
Yes, I hate it. I do. It feels like you're going to pee. So So you're playing with a click, and it's going, ping.
Yeah.
And wait, I'm not, I don't suck that bad. What's going on here? No, dude, you know. So you, I know you'll feel this in a rehearsal place. You know, if you're not killing it, you'll probably like them. But when you get into live, like when you're in crowds and stuff like that, and especially the places we play, the big places, I hate it. They sound electric. They don't sound like real drums. I don't care how many samples you put on and how much outboard gear you put on them to sauce them up. They don't sound real. And I'm a purist. Journey's an organic band. Neil was saying that last night. It's an organic band. We don't need this crap. But I had to adjust my playing style. I said, look, you know, if I don't want these, I'm going to have to do something as a player to warrant them not being there. So we did, man. And I've never played better. I got to be honest. I'm playing better now than I did 2 years ago when I first joined the band because I was still coming out and killing it. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to relax and just play and enjoy it and let those drums sing. And they are, dude. So we're taking them off. We're actually having our first sound check we stopped doing sound checks about 2 weeks into the tour. Because, like, well, you know, everything's dialed in, everything sounds good. But we're going in, we're taking the triggers off, and we're going to start over from scratch and let those things sing. So,
oh, nice.
Thank God for that.
I'm going to be able to hear it for myself because I am going to the show in Toronto, August the 2nd, Journey, Def Leppard, and Heart. So I'm excited for that. Let me ask you, when you're on tour, because you've done so many tours with Journey now, are any of them different? Like, what's it like? I mean, you're going from one tour to another. I mean, Journey is nonstop. Do you ever feel different? Yeah. Like, this tour feels different, whether it's the way the staging is done or the way your drums are set up on stage, whatever it is, or does it all just become automatic and it's just... One tour runs into another.
Yeah. Well, you know, dude, before I lost my gig, they did. It became work. Okay? It was just work, come home, and screw up my life with drugs and alcohol. Okay? Once I got sober and I came back, dude, I'm telling you, who in a million years would have thought that I would have been asked back into this band? Okay? Number one, with the stuff that happened. I mean, no way. You know, and I give glory to God for that, dude. I mean, every night, it's a perpetual state of gratitude. And the smile is real. And I'm not just putting a smile on saying, hey, fans, I'm smiling. It's an inexpressible joy, dude, to be back doing this music. I love the music. I do, bottom line. I grew up with this stuff. This music has touched me since childhood. So to play Swiss parts is an honor. You know, it's a dream gig for any drummer. I don't care who you are. I don't care what level you're at. I mean, to play these songs, it's a very spiritual thing. So, yeah, for me, the last 3 years have been the most beautiful time of my career because I'm sober and I'm playing better than I ever have. And it means something now. It's not a job. It's something I do not take for granted. I will never take for granted again. And I'm just grateful, dude, every day to be here. And I give glory to God. I do.
Well, it's good to have you. It's good to have you. It's good to have you back in one of the best bands of all time. Let me tell you. Do you? What my final question on Journey is that: do you ever go back and listen to some of the early albums? Just like have them on your whether it's your phone or your record player, whatever it is, and just kind of like I don't know when you hear things years later. There's things that you hear differently, right? Little nuances or never realize that. Or do you ever go back and listen to those? Or are you just kind of like in the mode of, here's our set. I know how to play it. I'm just going to go out and do this. Do you ever go back and revisit any of those Journey albums or no?
Oh, dude. Always, dude. You know, that's the thing. I'm a fan before I was in the band. So I love the music. I'll just put, you know, I can drive for 4 or 5 hours and just listen to music. I'll, you know, just get in my car and drive and listen. And Journey, it's not because I'm in the band. I love the music. I really love what they did and what they are doing and what I get to do. So, yeah, man, I revisit and I'll listen back. And I still talk to Smith all the time. Steve and I are really close, you know, and he's been such a mentor to me, not just as a player, but as a person, you know, just the person that he is. And yeah, I go back and I say, you know, what are you doing here? And I'm noticing this. And, you know, it's important to go back and revisit. And, you know, I try to stay true to his parts because they're the best parts ever for those songs. I mean, you're a drummer, you know, dude.
Absolutely.
His parts are not easy,
no,
but they're beautiful. And it's like putting, you know, to change it up is like putting a mustache on, you know, the Mona Lisa. It's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Absolutely.
These are works of art, and they're Smith's works of art. So I'm going to stay true. I embellish a little bit, bro, but I try to stay true to what he put down because they're brilliant parts. They are.
You know, you've done so many great things. You played with Ozzy, Paul Rodgers, Steve Vai. Journey Through Time was amazing. I watched that as well on YouTube. One person I want to ask you about, because I had not heard of this artist until I interviewed Will Hunt, and that was Vasco Rossi. I did not know you played with Vasco Rossi, and I don't understand Italian, but holy shit, does he kick ass over in Italy, let me tell you. Tell me about that experience real quick.
It was unbelievable, dude. I had just gotten booted from Ozzy, and I was devastated. Because I didn't know why. I wasn't sure. Obviously, the chemistry wasn't right. And I was going to retire. I told my wife, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, you can't get any higher than Ozzy. So Oscar's producer, Guido Elmi, called me. They got a hold of me and said, look, we want you to play with Oscar. I'm like, I told Shelly at the time, my wife, I don't want to do this. She goes, well, then just tell them you want an exorbitant amount of money, and they'll pass on you. So I asked for 10 grand a week. Now, back then, that was stupid, unheard of. You didn't even ask that kind of money. So I want 10 grand a week. If I'm there if I have more than 6 days off, I want to be flown home first class. I jumped it up, and they said yes. They said yes. I'm like, shit. You know what I mean? Like, oh, great. Okay. It was the best gig I could have ever done to get me back on the horse, bro. It was unbelievable. Stadiums every night, dude. San Siro, which is a football stadium, 100,000 people.
Crazy.
Sold out 3 nights in a row. Unbelievable. Greatest gig I ever did, dude. I'm telling you, it saved my career. Vasco saved my career because I was done. And then right after that, man, in 97, I got the call from Neil saying, hey, we're reforming Journey. Do you want to do this? It's without Perry. And I said, I don't care. As long as I'm with you, Neil, I don't care. I just want to work with you again. I miss you, you know. And he's like a big brother to me, dude. I owe Neil my entire career. I really do. He found me. He discovered me. He's taken me everywhere with my 3 years with Ozzy and that time with Vasco, those 3 years with Vasco. But, yeah, dude, I mean, that was a great gig. And I hated doing it. I didn't want to do it. But when I got there, I was in heaven, dude. And I gained like 15 pounds because they eat like pigs over there. They're unbelievably. They feed you well. So, yeah, I was a big chubby kid playing drums again. It was great.
That's crazy, though. But I had not heard of him until I did the interview with Will. And he says, you've got to go onto YouTube. Yeah. This guy plays to 100,000 people who are just, like, insane. Yeah. And so that is awesome. I can't
wait
to see you, too.
Perfect for that kid. Oh, dude, yeah. Will was perfect for that. He's come in, and he's torn. He gave Vasco balls again. After I left, they had a couple other guys.
Yeah.
But Will came in, and he gave him nuts again. So, you know, thank God for Will. He's a badass.